We get things underway by talking about the enduring popularity of one of the most successful groups in music history. Well, nearly 50 years after they were first heard on radios and record players around the world, ABBA still going strong. They open their virtual tour tomorrow night, and to talk more about them, we're joined by our friend Jed Gottlieb of the Boston Herald and Life magazine. Jed, thanks as always for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Good to talk to you.
I'm not sure anybody would have imagined back in, let's say the summer of 75 or so, that nearly 50 years later, Life magazine would be dedicating a special tribute issue to ABBA all these years later.
Yes, I don't think in 75 or 82 or maybe 90 anyone would have thought that. Although they spent the 70s as arguably the biggest pop group in the world, they had a long road to kind of come back as people eventually came out of the woodwork and admitted that they love ABBA and that has not changed.
Well, as you point out in a wonderful piece in Life magazine, this was a group that sought pop perfection. And I always thought, whether as a radio guy or just a listener, that the ABBA songs were so well constructed that when you heard them the first time, they seemed incredibly familiar, like you'd known them forever. Now, for me, that also meant I got tired of them more quickly, but there was certainly some craftsmanship that went into making those radio-friendly hits.
Absolutely. I think, it's kind of whether you like them or hate them, it's not hard to admit that they were meticulous in the way that they crafted these songs. And I think, if ABBA gets a hard time, it can often come through the lyrics written by non-native English speakers from Sweden. But the actual hooks and the production are really amazing. And they took the Beatles model of studio experimentation and said, hey, what if we didn't get weird? We just got tighter and cleaner and more polished. And so that's what they did with a lot of this stuff.
And I don't know if this is true. I think Casey Kasem might have told us this many years ago, that at least early on, do you know if this is true, that they did some of their singing phonetically because they were still working on their English?
Yeah, I know the four members did have various, and still do have, various levels of mastery of English. The two men a little bit more than the two women. So, yes, I think that they used a bunch of devices to kind of help them through. They didn't really even start singing in English until right around when Waterloo came out and became the Eurovision sensation. But they had all been in bands or had been solo acts for a decade in Sweden before any Americans knew about them. They had these long careers as, different Swedish pop and rock stars.
Well, and you write about the formula, a strange formula to say the least, two men writing the songs, but realizing how the voices of those women would bring them to life. And what's referred to, and I think it was by Benny, as the melancholy belt that comes from living in Scandinavia.
Yes, that's exactly right. It took them a little while. If you listen to their first album and even, some of their second album and stuff, the guys were singing just as much as the women. There weren't as much kind of harmonies and overlaps. But they eventually realized this formula. And Agneta wrote a song on an early album. So they were kind of experimenting with, who would be the writers and who would be the singers. But, I think, when you listen to ABBA's fans, and they really range from like Elvis Costello to Pete Townsend of The Who, they all pick up on this melancholy, and they think, you know, this is really what gave it its power, is that it was so poppy, so tight, so sharp, but there was a little bit of sadness to, you know, these songs, and that's how I kind of think they sort of stayed with people and resonated.
And you write about the surprise that Johnny Rotten and the Sex Pistols got in the late 90s when they sought to make fun of them but got a very different reaction from a crowd.
Yeah, the Sex Pistols celebrated a reunion, and their reunion coincided. It was the same kind of 20 years later. They both kind of came out, and when the Sex Pistols reunited, they played in London, and they, over the PA, before they came on the stage, they blasted Dancing Queen, you know, thinking, let's take these disco people down another peg. but nobody made fun of the song. Nobody booed or threw stuff. They all just kind of sang along. All these old punks waiting for their idols were, you know, admitted now that they loved Dancing Queen, even as they got ready to see the Sex Pistols.
We're talking with Jed Gottlieb here on Downtown. Well, I'm not sure anybody saw, I guess, the first wave of ABBA nostalgia, which was the Broadway show and the movies that have followed. I'm not sure anyone saw that coming in the 70s.
Yeah, and again, I don't think that the band did either. There have been a number of Broadway jukebox musicals that have come and gone, and some do okay, but Mamma Mia has been a blockbuster. It has been in dozens of countries and dozens of languages. It made it to China. It spawned two movies with, you know, Meryl Streep, A-list stars. It's been a really bizarre turn, and yet at the same time, when you listen to a lot of the songs, you can hear that kind of Broadway tunefulness. Benny and Bjorn did give that a try in the early 80s with a musical Chess that they wrote with Tim Rice, a long Broadway veteran. But it's still a very strange turn.
And then the album, four decades in the making, Voyage, which not only was a success, it turned out to be their highest charting album ever on the Billboard charts.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I think that, it got a response that was pretty overwhelmingly positive. I don't think it didn't launch a lot of hit singles, but I do remember Dave Grohl, drummer and leader of the Foo Fighters, Nirvana veteran, said he cried when he heard it. Another unlikely man who was brought to tears listening to it. But it was one of those things. I think enough time had passed. You know, they had all been divorced and remarried and had moved on with their lives that, when Benny and Bjorn said they wanted to try writing some songs, the two women agreed and, Benny told me we didn't know if we could write. We didn't know if they could sing. We just gave it a shot, and it just, it was just a joy to be back in the studio with zero pressure. So they wrote Trend Blind. They did not try and write a hit. They just tried to write some fun stuff that they would enjoy, and fans have really loved it.
Now they kick off this virtual tour starting tomorrow. So is this... is this a little too uncanny valley, or is this going to be a trend for aging performers?
Yeah, so we'll see. This will be, is this proof of concept, or is this a one-off? We don't know. We do know that they've sold hundreds of thousands of tickets, so this is unlike anything that anyone's ever seen, and they've really kept a tight lid on exactly what it's going to look like. They've been insistent it's not holograms, but it's four digital representations of themselves that they took. This is thousands of technicians working from Industrial Light and Magic, George Lucas's effects company, to bring the four members to life through motion capture. If you've seen Marvel movies or if you've seen Lord of the Rings, this is the, you know, this is the same technology that they're using to basically de-age ABBA and allow them to move around the stage with a live band, which is, you think that this is a terrible idea and an expensive, terrible idea, but they've already sold out dozens and dozens of nights at a custom-built London venue that they made just for the show. So it's pretty nuts. And, you know, one of the things they've said is this can go on forever. They can, in 5 years, they can put this in Vegas. They can bring this to Singapore. The stars will never age.
That's the, it's the dream of all performers right there.
Yes, it is.
You can check out Jed's piece on ABBA in the new Life magazine special tribute to ABBA as well. And while we've got you here, Jed, your live music, real live music, is back, and we're ready to get back out and see concerts again. What's happening? What are some things to keep an eye open for on the Boston music scene this summer?
Yeah, good question. Fenway's going to have a busy season. Excited for Paul McCartney in about a week and a half, 2 weeks. And
two shows, right? He added one.
Two shows. This guy is as we have seen, there's been no drop off in appreciation for the Beatles. And so he's managing to do two shows. And I'm kind of excited for Lady Gaga later in the summer at Fenway, because that's always a full-on spectacle. Some smaller acts. Greg Hawks of the Cars is playing with a local band here, Eddie Japan, and they're doing a bunch of Cars songs with a amazing energy. The Cars sadly had a reputation as not being a great live band, and so this has really done some wonders. They'll be at City Winery next month. And Lake Street Dive, Boston band, done really well. They'll be at the new venue Roadrunner for a couple of nights in June. Busy concert season. It's nice to see people getting out there and enjoying live music again.
I thought of you, Jed, several weeks ago now, but we had on a former local band from around here, but a group I know you enjoy their music, Sasha Alcott from When Particles Collide, was here with us.
Love them. Legendary little indie band from Maine who spent some time here, spent quite some time in Massachusetts, you know, playing shows, and always enjoy these underground bands that are trying to make a go of it, especially When Particles Collide, such talent.
Check out Jed's work in the Boston Herald, Life magazine, and more. Jed, always fun talking music with you. Thanks so much for being with us this afternoon, and we'll check in again before too long.
Great. Thanks for having me.